Go Loud.
Gavin is still on the ballot paper.
Yeah,
I think Jim Gavin
off.
Actually stopping campaigning could be good for his vote.
She said, just because you have a freedom doesn't mean you have to use it at every moment of every day.
Don't be wearing your good jumper every day. That's why I'm here, to sprinkle a little krill into people's lives.
Hello everybody and welcome to A Few Scoops. We are a comedy news podcast that seeks to inform you about what's happening in the world without making you despair for the future of the world. I am Aoife Murr. I am a journalist and author and documentary maker, and here, the Cillian Murphy to my Taylor Swift, is my co-host, Colm O'Regan.
Yes, actually it has been pointed out, hi, I'm Colm O'Regan, that I do have resting bollocks face, and that my default
Corkman
look, I don't know what it is. Like Cillian Murphy elsewhere in that interview with Taylor's, or in that Graham Norton couch with Taylor Swift, his face lit up but his face defaults to, is a disappointed Cillian Murphy. And I would absolutely empathise, and I know this because I remember saying to somebody, oh, I thought I saw you at that thing. And they said, yes, you glared at me. Right. So I have a default glare. And so, yes, I am Cillian Murphy's understudy in default disappointed face.
It's also worth pointing out that if Cillian Murphy was a woman and had that face, people would think and criticise him for being a total bitch. This week, we give our deepest sympathies to Fianna Fáil as their candidate rolls out of the race. The kidnapped Irish people from the flotilla have been deported from Israel and returned home. It's budget week this week. It's not austerity, but it's not much better. A former reform leader has been charged with bribery from Russia, and Belfast City Council will get new signs in Irish. Now, as is our weekly tradition, we're going to talk about the presidential election. Have you heard anything about the presidential election this week, Colm?
Some things happened. Yeah, this is as big as the Brian Lenehan thing, I'd say, in 1990. There was a couple of Brian Lenehan things. I don't know if people
Which
remember.
Which one are you talking about?
Well, there was the mature recollection one where he denied having contacted the president about the dissolution of the Dáil. I mean, you think about it, God, they get into such a tiz over such small things. And so then he admitted that actually, no, I did. And the phrase was on mature recollection.
Well,
that was one. And then there was the other one. P. Flynn basically made it definite that most women would vote for Mary Robinson when he went on the radio and said something like, well, the Mary Robinson we knew had no interest in her family. I see now she's all about being a mother, or words to that effect. P. Flynn is still around, so if I've put words in your mouth, Horrock Flynn, I'm sorry, but that you, thanks for getting Mary Robinson elected.
Yeah.
So that was what we used to do in 1990. There was the Sean Gallagher thing, but this week, I think.
Well, this is another situation where mature recollection would have come in handy.
Yeah.
So former GAA manager, six All-Ireland winning manager Jim Gavin, who was the Fianna Fáil candidate for president. Maybe should be worth noting that he was not a member of Fianna Fáil before he became the candidate, and that should have been Micheál Martin's first red flag. However, he dropped out of the race sensationally on Sunday after it actually only, I worked out, it was actually only 5 days of this story, but it felt very long. They say a week is a long time in politics. I would say this felt about a year and a half for Jim Gavin.
Yeah.
So reporting in the Irish Independent last week revealed that Jim Gavin, a landlord, still owed his previous tenant €3,300, and that it had not been paid back. The tenant, who was expecting a baby at the time, had a banking error in which he continued to pay rent when he wasn't living in the place. He attempted to contact Jim Gavin repeatedly. He couldn't find him. At one point, he went to Jim Gavin's parents' house and said, could you give me Jim's mobile number so I can try and get this money back? This is all according to the tenant. Jim Gavin said he would have it sorted, he'd pay the money back, and it wasn't paid back. When this all emerged, Jim Gavin said he couldn't remember. He said it was a very stressful time for him and his family, It was around the time of the crash, which we know was a very stressful time for a lot of people, a lot of people's families, including my own. Maybe worth noting that the party in power that brought around the crash was the party that he was running for president for. Anyway, so he couldn't answer any questions on it. It later emerged that the rental tenancy was not registered with the Rental Tenancies Board. Jim Gavin couldn't say if he had broken the law by not registering it. It became very clear that he wasn't going to weather this. He was on The Week in Politics on Sunday at lunchtime, and it was around 9:30, 10:00 on Sunday night when a statement was released by Jim Gavin in which he said, "I made a mistake that was not in keeping with my character and the standards I set myself," and that he was now taking steps to address the matter. Which means
there's only one step, though. just pay the money.
Yeah, so then Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil minister, said yesterday that Jim Gavin had held up his hands and done the right thing. He hasn't held up his hands. He was basically hounded and they stand down. He hasn't apologised. And as far as we know, he hasn't paid the money back. So the notion that he held up his hands and done the right thing is not correct. Now, this has created a lot of hassle within Fianna Fáil because Micheál Martin handpicked Jim Gavin, and as we talked about on this podcast, he pressured his TDs to vote for Jim Gavin, a celebrity candidate, over MEP Billy Kelleher, who has been around, has actually been elected in Fianna Fáil politics since 1992. Poor Billy was out in his ear, and Micheál Martin pressured his TDs to vote for this new candidate who wasn't even a member. This has called into question Micheál Martin's leadership, and they say he has let down the membership. The Taoiseach said last night that Jim Gavin was repeatedly asked by the party if he had ever an issue with a tenant, and Mr. Gavin said, absolutely not. Micheál Martin said he clearly did not deal with it at the time or since, and probably buried it somewhere in the recesses of his mind.
Amateur psychiatrist there, Micheál Martin, talking
so
about
so amateur recollection.
Freudian analysis.
He did then remember that he owed this person €3,300. There has been a lot of criticism of Micheál Martin and the vetting procedures around getting this information out of Jim Gavin.
I was ready to go off on one about the vetting procedures in the sense that I was coincidentally listening to a podcast, Red Raw podcast, and they were talking to Christine from The Traitors.
Yeah.
And one of my favourite contestants on The Traitors, she was the one who got killed with a hug.
Yes.
And
she was also from Cork, which I think is the main thing for
from Ballincollig. Yeah, and she also used the brilliant phrase, "the dirty article." When describing her betrayal. That's a separate thing which I'd love to cover in my High Bar No English podcast. But anyway, she talked about the vetting in The Traitors that they do, that they go back through all of your stuff, like your exes, your social media posts, all that kind of thing. Like, basically, will anything come out if we're putting you on either the villain or the saintly, faithful pedestal? Is it going to be ruined by your comments?
By old racist tweets?
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, why didn't Fianna Fáil do stuff like this?
Yeah, why can't Fianna Fáil be more like RTE, they cry?
Yeah, our independent producers, in fairness, Kite Entertainment. The question, though, is like, what more could they do if they asked him, you know,
you could go and find the previous tenants, or even ask, hey, did you register that tenancy? Yeah. And if he said yes, go and look and ask the tenancies, could I see that register to make sure that he's telling the truth?
Maybe they just didn't know to ask normal landlord stuff because they're all landlords.
Exactly,
as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's very fitting that the thing that took Jim Gavin out of this presidency is that the way he treated a renter.
Yeah.
In this social catastrophe we live in of a housing crisis at the minute, this will not wash away people anymore. And I think as well, it's worth noting that he was a late entry to the presidential race because Fianna Fáil, as we talked about before, were milling through people, couldn't think of anyone. And the reason there was no standout person is because anybody with any seniority in the party was part of a government that bankrupted the country. And they didn't feel like they had anyone they could put forward.
Yes, and they know this because they've been nominating outsiders for years, ever since the Brian Lennon thing, which is basically stuff you did in the past while in power messes up.
Yeah.
So Mary McAleese wasn't an insider.
No.
They shafted
former RTE journalist.
Yeah, shafted Albert Reynolds to get Mary McAleese because Albert Reynolds thought
he had it. Wonderful decision.
Yeah, thought he had it sewn up. And then they went, did they officially back Sean Gallagher? Was he their candidate?
No, he wasn't their candidate.
He wasn't their candidate. But he wasn't.
He was a former member.
Yeah, not their candidate. Yeah. If you know what I mean. Like, they didn't put anyone up against him. Yeah. Sure they didn't. So they've been skirting around this for years because they kind of know. I mean, the two things on this for me, Jim Gavin is still on the ballot paper.
Yeah,
I think Jim Gavin actually stopping campaigning could be good for his vote.
If he just stopped talking.
If he doesn't appear on TV debating and talking about, he no longer has to deal with drones or anything like that. And the other thing I would say is there has to be a back to basics now for Fianna Fáil for the next presidential election. Their next candidate is going to have to be called La Masse de Valera Lynch.
Yeah.
They're going to be a 30-something OAP auctioneer undertaking maybe League of Ireland Soccer. And they will
remember the working people.
Cover all of the bases. Maybe a small farmer as well too.
Do you know he was a farmer? Billy Kelleher.
Billy Kelleher was a farmer. And do you know what Billy Kelleher did? He went to my father's funeral. So didn't go to my mother's funeral now. I was willing to overlook that. But, you know, they didn't trust their people. And when you, like, it's that weird, it's a weird Fianna Fáil thing of we are Fianna Fáil, our DNA, but we don't trust it because we've been around for so long.
I think they know that the brand is pretty toxic. I think they do well in a general, but you're not, and because the presidential election is a popularity contest, it kind of runs on vibes.
And
they're not great vibes.
Journalists have, and I don't mean this pejoratively, they literally have nothing better to do than look at three candidates.
Yeah.
So there's loads of time. Like there's 42 constituencies, 200 candidates of interest around the country. You're spread pretty thin. And in fairness, we should say good journalism.
That gets, great, you know, journalism has to be paid for
and all that. I mean, they did more due diligence than Fianna Fáil in finding out.
And also, can I give a shout out to this tenant, right? He has waited 16 years. Jim Gavin won 6 All-Irelands and he sat on this information, just biding his time until Jim Gavin, and it wasn't even in the first week.
Yeah.
He was like, do you know what? I'm going to see how Jim Gavin gets on.
Yeah.
And then went to the papers and said, here, this fella owes me money.
Yeah. And I think there's something about the manner in which I have absolute sympathy. Somebody owes me 50 quid because of a banking error from 2012.
2012.
And I've got over it, apart from every time I see them pop up on Facebook. You know,
is it
are my joy or whatever. And we're like,
is it someone you know in a personal context or professional?
It's professional. It was a crap gig. Like the gig should be buried in general. Like, it was.
But they owe you 50 quid.
They owe me 50 quid. And, you know.
I wouldn't be able to sleep at night.
Yeah.
It would give, like.
People can sleep. Melatonin.
Melatonin.
Jim Gavin's been on melatonin since before it was cool.
Yeah, I wonder how much melatonin costs. I wonder if it's €3,300. Anyway.
One last thing. The amount of money to bring down a Fianna Fáil candidate is going down.
It's cost of living crisis.
Charlie Haughey got away with $1 million. Bertie Ahern got caught in the tens of thousands. But now we're down to 3,300. Like the next Fianna Fáil candidate's going to be caught over a Lewis ticket.
It's going to be the person that owes you 50 quid.
Yeah.
So after all that, the campaign continues. The ballot is on October the 24th. Please go out and use your vote if you can. And I am absolutely delighted to say that the two candidates for president remaining in the race are both women.
Yeah.
It is two women who have served their time in public life on councils. They have both been TDs. One of them has been a minister. One of them has been a mayor. Both.
Oh, that's a bit harsh. No, I don't think they were a mayor. I think they were very good. Oh, sorry. A mayor of a town. Sorry.
Yeah, the campaign continues. Debates are due to happen in the next couple of weeks. And the next president of Ireland will be a woman.
Very good. And both candidates, their surname and first name initials are the same, CC and HH.
Yeah, what do you call it? Alliteration.
Alliteration, yeah. I mean, it's clearly the work of the World Economic Foundation and George Soros again.
As always, I'd like to add the caveat that I am paid as a media consultant for the Catherine Connolly campaign. I am not paid to talk about her on this podcast in a promotional way, so I won't be. However, Catherine Connolly, the candidate, has gone slightly viral this week for doing keepy uppies and playing basketball with some kids in the flats in Dublin.
Yeah.
There was a number of queries sent to the campaign asking whether the video was AI. And the campaign said, we can assure you it is not. Catherine is always doing keepy uppies. And they said that she used to be able to do 100 in one go. Said she doesn't feel like she's very good anymore.
And just for the interest of balance, because you are a paid consultant for the Catherine Connolly campaign, we would welcome any keepy uppies at Heather Humphreys do as
well
too.
I don't think we need to be measuring people's political abilities by keepy uppies.
Yeah.
I'm sure Gerry Adams is great at them. I'm sure Micheál Martin is great at them. Doesn't mean they're great at the job.
Also, once again, Catherine Connolly, by staying true to her beliefs say, on keepy uppies, has left herself open because when she, in the basketball bit of it, she's travelling and using too many steps. So just always putting her foot in it.
Yeah, and I would say that her opponents were two small children as well. So
she was just about this side of Boris Johnson cleaning out a small Japanese child.
We will move on from Jim Gavin's money issues to the country's money issues. Today, Tuesday, where we record this podcast, is Budget Day, Budget 2026. What really matters, what we people always talk about the price of a pint, price of cigarettes. Realistically, I think people know these days that we are in a cost of living crisis and a housing crisis, and that's more what people are worried about. So the budget sits now at 9.4 billion.
So that's 9.4 billion extra. Is that what the 9.4?
Yes. Okay. So although you would say that this is an eye-watering figure, it's basically being treated like an austerity budget.
Mm.
And that kind of shows you where we are in terms of overall spending. So the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael government say that they had to do this type of budget because of all the economic uncertainty in the world, Trump's tariffs, cost of living crisis, etc., etc. They feel that there's a lot of instability going on and they can't be giving stuff away. So in the last number of years, we saw bigger cost of living packages, so like energy credits, double child benefit, one-off payments for people on disabilities. None of that this year. None of that at all, and they won't be doing it because of that said instability. Core social welfare rates will rise by 10 euro and fuel allowance will rise by 5. The government say that they will increase student grant thresholds, which they also cut, provide thousands more childcare places, and they'll add 500 million to the disabilities budget. They will continue the 9% rate on VAT for energy. And they will cut the VAT for hospitality businesses, which I don't think a lot of people know. It's hotels, bars, restaurants, and for some reason, hairdressers.
Okay.
My friend's a hairdresser and she talks about the VAT rate all the time.
Yeah.
Barbers not, but hairdressers, yes.
Okay, once again, the matriarchy suppressing.
Mm-hmm. So the continuation of the rent tax credit, which I have received before, it remains at 1,000 euro for a single person or 2 grand for a jointly assessed couple. And mortgage interest relief will continue for 2 or more years. As you can imagine, the opposition have already said that this does not in any way go far enough. People are pinned to their collar when it comes to the cost of basically everything. I think if anyone goes to Tesco's or Aldi or anywhere, I can't get over the price of groceries. Like, I feel like an old lady, but I honestly can't get over it. It's so expensive.
Sausage rolls was my thing when I thought I could remember getting 3 sausage rolls for €1. And it just doesn't happen anymore now. It's like,
you'd be lucky if you got it for €4 now.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they're not a core. They're not part of the of your 5 a day, unless you're getting 5 sausage rolls a day.
So as someone who's worked in politics for a very long time and covered a number of budgets, I'm still really terrible at them. And I think if you want to get a good read on what the budget will and won't do, and you're not interested in politics, what I usually do is I look at the statements from charities and NGOs. So you will have the disability sector, single parents, groups that represent, you know, children in care, drug rehabilitation centres, all those types of outlets who obviously they have a vested interest, but their vested interest is making their charity sector better.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to get into a back and forth with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and the Social Democrats and Sinn Féin or whatever else, go and look at what the sectors have to say. So they'll, RTE and a number of other broadcasters will have the head of, say, Women's Aid, the head of, you know, different disability charities on talking about what the money means to them and how much money they actually need. I think that's the best way to analyse the budget.
And also every budget will have a thing they haven't thought through.
Mm.
It'll have one group who is disproportionately affected. And apart from the intrinsic effect that it's having, it's also illuminating to see where a government's blind spot is to show, oh, we never thought of people in that situation because we've no experience of it.
Like, remember in COVID lockdown when people couldn't get shoes for kids?
Yeah.
Even though there's 2 women and one of them was pregnant at the cabinet table, and it just didn't dawn on anyone, the kids' feet grow really fast and they'd closed all the shoe shops.
All the people around the table, you know, they were doing their best for COVID, but they had no experience.
But they also come from all, they're all cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why we need diversity in politics. 15 Irish citizens were deported to Greece yesterday. They were originally taken from the Global Summit Flotilla sailing to Gaza on an aid ship. Taoiseach Simon Harris confirmed in a statement on Monday that the Irish citizens detained in Israel have been released and are currently on a journey home. I seen a lovely video of a very thin looking and tired looking Chris Andrews, the Sinn Féin senator, Tadhg Hickey, a number of Irish people coming through the airport in Greece. They looked very happy not to be in Israel anymore. There were 16 Irish people held by Israel, but the Global Movement for Gaza era said that one of them, Michael Fix, is a US passport holder who is subject to a different deportation process. The Irish people released are named as Katrina Graham, Senator Chris Andrews, Colin Byrne, Cormac O'Daly, Dermot McDouglas, Donna Schwartz, Louise Heaney, Maureen Almey, Paddy Kelly, Patrick O'Donovan, not the Fine Gael Minister, Sarah Clancy, Tadhg Hickey, Tara O'Grady, Tara Sheehy and Thomas McCune. The Israeli Foreign Ministry confirmed that these citizens were among the 171 people released from detention, along with Swedish activist Greta Thunberg. So we talked about this flotilla before. It was carrying medicine, food, aid, nappies to Gaza, where a man-made famine is ongoing and around 500 people have starved to death. And a genocide is being carried out by Israel, something that Ireland has joined the case against in the ICC.
And just to pick up what we talked about before, which is what is the point of something like this and the importance of symbolism? Because it's very easy. You look at any stories of this, the comments underneath, sometimes real people, sometimes bots, is like, oh, they're on a jolly, they're doing it for their own self-aggrandizement.
Mm.
What good is it? They could have put the aid in through any one of a number of couple of ports. This is just a big publicity stunt. And I'm like, yes, exactly. It's a publicity stunt. You don't know how publicity works.
Yeah.
If you think something is just a publicity stunt.
And also it's worth noting that Israel has been withholding aid from the people of Gaza.
So these people sailed, took time off from work. Some of them have jobs and families. They were about 2 weeks at sea on small boats, not a cruise.
No.
And for at least half of that time, they were buzzed by drones and sound, what do you call them, sonar explosions.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I would imagine, in a list of things that you could do where you think I might die from doing this, right? Some of them are recreational, but this was, I could die because people have died.
People have died on flotillas before. Israel has killed people on flotillas before.
Yeah, so there is no benefit to the person. Potential costs are so high.
Mm-hmm.
This could only be for altruistic reasons.
One activist who was arrested and released is Sarah Clancy. She's from Galway and she described the last few days as overwhelming and really unpleasant. She said, however unpleasant that it have been for us at an Israeli high security prison with all the world's media eye on us, we can only imagine what it must be like for Palestinians. Ms. Clancy said the activists were transported to a prison where we had no clean drinking water in our cell and that she had to sleep on the floor. No toilet paper, no sanitary towels for the woman. They did not have mattresses to sleep on and they were being woken up throughout the night for no reason. And as she said, Clancy says, if this is what they're doing to Irish people who have consulates and people looking out for them and the world's media watching, God only knows what they're doing to Palestinians. Greta Thunberg spoke to the world's media in Greece last night when she was deported from Israel, and this is what she had to say when she got there.
Let me be very clear. There is a genocide going on in front of our very eyes. A live-streamed genocide on all of our phones. No one has the privilege to say we are not aware of what is happening. No one in the future will be able to say we did not know.
And just to give an update, the first day of talks between Hamas and mediators on Monday ended in a positive atmosphere, according to local media in Egypt. It is 2 years since October 7th, today, Tuesday, when we record the attack that killed 1,200 people. Since October 7th, more than 67,000 Palestinians have been killed, with thousands more under the rubble. At least 20,000 children are among the dead. One child has been killed every hour. That's one out of every 33 people in Gaza has been killed by Israel. Colin, we're going to do our weekly roundup of the Brits.
Okay.
They're never not at it. So it's conference season. So Labour and the Tories had their conferences this week. Labour, who are under a lot of criticism for their inability to label what's happening in Gaza a genocide, their slide towards the right wing, their slashing of disability benefits, and their demonization and criminalization of Palestinian activists. So there was a number of really bizarre interviews that the Labour MPs gave this week. The Secretary of State for the Home Department, Shabana Mahmood, at one point said that the government needs to get the balance right of people to protest and express free speech and the right of the wider community to go about their business free of fear. And then when she was pressed if it was a dark step to limit the fundamental right to protest, she said, just because you have a freedom doesn't mean you have to use it at every moment of every day.
Yeah, don't be wearing your good jumper every day. You'll appreciate it more than...
I always feel like I really feel my freedom when I'm not allowed to do things whenever I want. Yeah. That's when I feel the most free.
Yeah. The context for this, I think, is... So she was talking about repeated protests. And it was in the wake of the Manchester synagogue attack that pro-Palestine demonstrators were asked to basically leave it for a week in Manchester and London. And there's an argument for that. But aside from that, they're just still in this bloody mess of having prescribed essentially aggressive graffiti artists for who graffitied a warplane. And they put them on the, remind us again of who they are on the same level as Palestine Action.
They're up there with like the Loyalist Volunteer Force, Al-Qaeda, Hamas.
Yeah. And as of yet, still the only thing they've done
is graffiti.
Yeah. No, it was a Jess Phillips was cornered. Is that her name? She, Labour Minister, cornered by a protester saying, what other intelligence are you basing this on? And she just said, I've seen some stuff.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know her. She goes to a different school.
I actually think that full interview said, would you have prescribed the suffragettes?
Suffragettes, yeah.
And Jess Phillips said, no, I don't think so. And she goes, well, actually, the suffragettes actually carried out criminal activities and injured people.
Suffragettes threw bombs at buildings.
Yeah. So the suffragettes and their supporters raided Parliament, physically assaulted politicians and smashed the windows of government buildings. In one instance, a suffragette assaulted the future Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, with a horsewhip on the platform of Bristol Railway Station.
But did they paint as yet to be invented warplanes? That is the question. Suffragettes, of course, went on to become, some of the suffragettes went on to become some truly awful people as well too.
Did they?
Involved in eugenics, and they clamped down on people who didn't want to volunteer for World War One, sending them white flowers and all that kind of stuff. So just goes to show, horseshoe theory. Anyway, it's of all of the things... Like, it's, I wonder, are they trapped by it, the British government, in that they can't go back in it now? Because they're still arresting.
Too far gone.
Still arresting 500 people a week. And part of the.
I actually know someone from Derry who has been arrested and charged with being a member of Palestine Action, and she's only like 20.
Right. Okay. Yeah. They do everything very young.
She's
in
quite
Derry,
happy. Yeah, we do. We do bloom very, very early. I was 13 when I got my first caution.
Is that right? What was that for?
Not Derry.
We'll wait till you run for president, then it will come out.
Yeah.
An unnamed RUC officer claims you owe £100 in a fine.
Yeah.
So that was the Labour, is it the Home Secretary?
Yep.
So she's talking about clamping down on repeated protests. And then in the meantime, the Conservative conference is on at the moment, is it?
The Conservative conference was on last week. There was a viral interview that was given by my former colleague, Jane McCormick, great journalist at the BBC Northern Ireland, in which she asked, is the Conservatives a divisive party? You know, how can they say they brought about unity when they brought about Brexit? And Kemi Badenoch said, well, if you remember, Northern Ireland voted to leave. And Jane McCormick had to say, no, sorry, Northern Ireland voted to stay.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, yes, you're right.
It was one of the other ones.
One of the other countries
Wales.
We don't care about.
I think Wales voted to leave.
Yeah, Wales
narrowly.
Voted to leave, yeah. No longer in the swine group of Celts.
Yeah.
After they voted to leave. But then, as if things couldn't get worse, they spelled Britain wrong on some of their merchandise.
Well, I don't want to spell shame people. Britian. Which apparently is the ancient Celtic name. No, it's not. Yeah. There's no spelling of it in that sense. So, Labour... In a twist over...
And also just to add, just to be fair to Labour, the Tories also support the prescription of Palestine Action as well. So it's not that Labour's alone in this. I actually think because of the pressure that both the right-wing parties in the Conservatives and Reform were putting on Labour, that's why they feel they have to take these very mindless right-wing steps to demonise people.
History has shown it never works, I think, if you try to ape whoever's dragging you in one direction in an extreme way, you end up losing to them on the extreme stuff and then losing your middle people anyway. And then speaking of the other direction, Reform flying high in the polls. Lots of people like them. Reform would be off to the right.
Who's the leader?
Is Nigel Farage, political Lazarus, who at one point was doing cameo videos for people for whatever, 40 quid maybe, is now the leader of the largest party in the polls, but still, they don't have many MPs, do they?
No.
Three or four still. A victim of Britain's first-past-the-post system. They would have got a lot more TDs or MPs if they had proportional representation or single transferable vote. But
they have five MPs.
Five MPs. But they're in a spot of bother in that their former leader in Wales, as is from the BBC, has admitted taking bribes to make statements in favour of Russia while being a member of the European Parliament. He pleaded guilty to 8 counts of bribery between 6th of December 2018 and 18th of July 2019. So quite a hipster pro-Russian MEP in that he was doing it before it was cool. He took money from Oleg Voloshin, a man once described by the US government, I'm reading from the BBC here, as a pawn of Russian secret services. He made speeches in Parliament. This is an actual case that's happened. Maybe this will let people know that actually, in general, in politics in Western Europe, the threat from Russian money is no longer on the left, it's on the right.
And also, it's worth just the fun fact, 20% of Reform UK's MPs have a conviction for assaulting women.
Yeah, not exactly the diversity in politics stat we were looking for.
We're heading north for this story. Belfast City Council have passed a vote in favour of adopting new draft Irish language policy that will lead to more use of the language across the city. The policy aims to promote the use of Irish in public life. The council will adopt English/Irish signs at facilities, as well as new bilingual logo for vehicles and uniforms. The DUP proposal for no changes to be made to staff uniforms failed. And welcoming in the vote, Sinn Féin said it was a historic decision by councillors. As you can imagine, this has not gone down well. So in the aftermath of this, which is seen as a very historic moment for Belfast City Council and a step towards equality.
Can I interrupt? How come it passed? Has there been a change in election demographics?
And Alliance have backed it as well. The Alliance Party have backed it as well, as have, you know, People for Profit and Sinn Féin as well. So in the aftermath, loyalist paramilitaries have threatened council staff. They say that they will intercept any staff coming in to bring in these new signs. And this has obviously been condemned, been found to be reprehensible by unionist and nationalist councillors and MLAs alike. And then in the last 24 hours, there has been a discovery of a viable explosive device outside the Sinn Féin constituency office in Newry.
Yeah.
So a pipe bomb was left at the office shared by the Newry and Armagh MP Dara Hughes and Infrastructure Minister Liz Kimmins in County Down. The ATO made the device safe and it was taken away for further investigation. Vice President of Sinn Féin, Michelle O'Neill, said the incident was absolutely horrific and she and her colleagues will not be deterred. The police have not confirmed whether the pipe bomb is linked to Belfast City Council or it's just a run-of-the-mill pipe bomb.
Yeah.
Just a different one.
Local artisan pipe bomb.
Yeah,
a lot of people with skills.
So Belfast City Council have said that they have committed £1.9 million to begin implementing the policy over the next 2 years. We have regular updates being brought back to the councillors and we can see how access to our services and facilities through Irish is increasing over time.
So for the people who like to speak Irish, when you see Irish on official signs, does that make you feel good? Because we take it for granted.
Yeah, of course.
In the Republic.
Yeah, it's the same as even when Michelle O'Neill became First Minister, even if people didn't vote for her, if you were an SDLP person or whatever else, I think the symbolism of having someone who the system set up to exclude be voted in charge was historic for people. And I think, especially for people like my mammy's age, who have always felt second class in the place that they're from, and not just felt second class, were second class.
So your mam is, can we say what age?
It's actually her birthday today.
Very good.
She is over 50.
Okay.
And, you know, my granny, for instance, had 6 kids before she ever got the vote. You know, excluded from university, excluded from jobs, excluded from the civil service. shamed for speaking Irish. Speaking Irish, if your family spoke Irish, you were considered deeply Republican and therefore to be viewed with suspicion by the British Army and security services. They demonised the language and they criminalised the language. And, you know, I think somewhere like Belfast City Hall, Belfast City Council were like the hub of Protestant Northern Ireland. For them then now to vote and say we're going to have bilingual signs is a big step in equality, and people can say it's a waste of money and, you know, we should be concentrating on other things. But the more we can do to unravel colonialism will be better for all of society. And the fact of the matter is, the Irish language doesn't belong to Catholics. Linda Irvine is doing great work in East Belfast. She said herself she was brought up as a unionist, and she said, you know, she understands her own history better through speaking Irish. And we're seeing a lot more of that now. So there will be obviously loyalist and unionist people who feel threatened by this. But there's no need to feel threatened, I don't think. I think, you know, there has been enough time that's gone past now. I think everyone knows that things have to change. There are always going to be people who are full of hate and stuck in the past. But things move on. Colm O'Regan, hit me with your good news for this week.
Okay. Sometimes it's hard to find local good news. So you just decide, tell you what, let's head for massive climate news. So a turning point for the oceans. So here's the thing about the planet. Most of it's water and we always ignore it. And it has most to do with global warming. Most of the nature is there. Most of the energy absorbed by the sun is there. So when you do stuff with the oceans, for good or for bad, it's the one that makes all the difference.
Okay.
So the UN, much maligned, does it do much? Blah, 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 you know, talking shop, all that. But they still get stuff done. So they have a huge thing called the High Seas Treaty, which is enshrining in international law protecting the oceans. And not just the ocean you can see, but the bit beyond. So 200 miles off most people's coast, nobody owns it. You can get up to whatever awful shit you want in terms of dragging the seabed. You can't do much wrong because it isn't law to protect it as much as the bit around our borders. So there's a thing called High Seas Treaty. And last week, they crossed the threshold that said 60 countries had ratified it. And that means now that it has achieved a status that actually stuff can actually be done with it.
Okay.
So protecting biodiversity. And like, it's so abstract, all this stuff. It's so miles out of our reckoning. But like, do you know krill, right?
Yeah, that's krill. What whales eat. I learned that from Finding Nemo.
Whales eat it. But krill do literally do shit, right? So they take carbon out of the atmosphere and bring it down to the seafloor.
Wow.
But it's protecting that kind of stuff. Because there's mad stuff out there on the ocean that can probably cure diseases we haven't heard of.
Mm.
And we may lose it without knowing. So protecting the high seas, again, there'll be some dicks who won't. Mm. But if you can get enough countries in it, then this is a good news thing that is hard to grasp, won't affect your day to day, but it's going on out there. So we should feel good about that as part of
my protect our oceans
operation. We hear about the bad news many more times than we hear about the good news. So that's why I'm here, to sprinkle a little krill into people's lives.
Okay, listener good news. Every week we like to hear your good news as listeners of A Few Scoops. If you would like to DM them to me or Colm, or send them to afewscoops@goloudnow.com. This week says, I'm a massive fan of the podcast and I made my friend leave Kneecap early and sprint to the tent during EP to catch some of it. My good news is that I study law and we recently had to do an assignment called What is Politics in relation to a piece of media, and I chose to do it on you guys for how accessible you make complex headlines and issues going on in the news and stop misinformation. I recommended this podcast to my friends who aren't into politics and aren't sure what is true and what is not. Thank you. Oh my God, I'm going to cry.
Yeah. I probably know who that person is given how many people are in the tent. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. And Colm has some good news this week.
What is my book, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's. I'm just going to keep saying it every week. My book is out on the 30th of October. It's called Gallivanting with Words, How the Irish Speak English. And it's being launched in Dubray Books on October 29th. And it's available for pre-sale at all good pre-sale-y places.
Woo-hoo.
But go into the bookshops to buy it. It's my favourite book that I've written so far.
What a flex.
Yeah.
And my good news this week is that my documentary that I announced last week had its second episode come out on Monday. And we are currently beating Strictly the iPlayer chart for the North. And I did Question Time last week.
Yeah, you went viral.
I went viral last week.
There was the
yeah.
woman in the audience. I loved her. She said, the 2023 census said there was 20%.
She didn't call it a census. She called it the consensus.
The consensus. Was con as in it's all fake.
It's all con, yeah.
The 2023 consensus said there was 20% of people in Ireland were born outside of Ireland. And then she said, I'd say it's more like 30.
She said she didn't feel like that was the right
number.
Yeah,
she thought it was more like 30. And census was in 2022. The numbers were 8% or something like that. And then she just added VAT onto it for the crack. And it wasn't the VAT rate in the hospitality industry.
No,
this was the full,
wasn't.
It was capital gains tax, actually.
It was a bizarre experience. I was very, very scared.
First time on Question Time?
Of course, yeah, very scared. I grew up watching Question Time. I came from a very politically nerdy house, so I watched a lot of Question Time. It was terrifying, and after I answered a question, I couldn't take a drink of water because my hand was shaking so much that I would have just spilled the water all over the table.
You're also back on the viral feeds, a clip of you presenting from Kelly Harrington's
Homecoming.
Victory, and you're on with the BBC, and then everybody's shouting up their ass behind you.
Yeah, I was in Portland Row. This actually happened over a year ago, but for some reason it's like been picked back up and gone viral again. But I was doing a homecoming for Kelly Harrington at the Olympics at Portland Row, and a number of small children, while I was live on TV, shouting ooh-ah up their ass.
And do you think that was because of your northern accent, or was it just general ambient ooh-ah up their ass?
Do you know, deep down, I knew something was going to happen. They say never work with children and animals. And I just knew when it was the cameraman's idea as well. And I've never let him forget it. I was like, it was your idea to surround me with all these small children. And I just knew something was going to go wrong.
The absolute acme of delivering pieces to camera while surrounded by excited people is Marty Morrissey outside an All-Ireland final.
It's amazing.
He has this level of control where it's like he's going, I'm going to deliver the piece. Hold, hold, and then I'm going to finish on, but the fans of Clare, and I'm like, the whole thing just goes insane behind them. So I would model, if I ever have to do that kind of thing, I would model it on Marty Morrissey.
If you think you can handle and control inner city children on a summer's day, I would love to see it.
You just need to speak to them in their, what concerns them, Eva?
That's us for this week. Please do rate and review A Few Scoops, as it means a lot to us. I am going to see Purr in the Gate Theatre this weekend.
Yes.
I'm very excited. My good friend, Dr. Katrina O'Sullivan, has written the best-selling book, and now it's a play, so I'm going to see that on Saturday. What are you doing?
Well, I have a very exciting interview to do next Monday. Tell you all about it on next week's pod.
Yes, do.
And yeah, I'm in the middle of prep for it. It's probably my biggest interviewing gig so far. And that includes Pascal Donoghue at Kilconomics, who I'm also interviewing again at Kilconomics this year. So, but even bigger than Pascal Donoghue. Tell you all about it next week.
Thank you.